Hey, it's Talk Dance, everybody. Let's talk dance. I'm Justin Jones. I'm a Minneapolis choreographer and dancer, and also the producer slash host of this podcast. For today's podcast, I spoke with Chris Yan and Taryn Griggs, who are the curators of this year's Choreographer's Evening, which is playing at the Walker November 30th at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy. So I'm here with Chris Yan and Taryn Griggs in their kitchen. We are having tater tots and sloppy joes. And we are going to talk about Choreographer's Evening, of which Chris and Taryn were the curators for this year. And their daughter Beatrix happens to be in the kitchen with us. There she is. So you might hear Beatrix. We're all enjoying our food. So, Chris and Taryn, the first thing I was going to ask you about was, I was going to ask you if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about the history of Chris and Taryn, where your collaboration started, and where its roots are, and where it's taken you, or...
We met at the audition for The Yard, which is a residency... the Bessie Schoenberg artist residency at the Yard in the summer for the summer of 2002.
Mm-hmm.
So it's February. The auditions were in February, and that's when I first saw, I remember seeing Taryn dance, and fell immediately in love with her. And then we worked together. She was in my piece at the Yard, and through that, we began. And when we came back and we started making, she's been in everything basically ever since.
So you've been working together for a long time. It's how many years? It's 11 years. What do you think, other than your personal entanglement, what is it about working with Chris, or what is it about working with Taryn that keeps you interested in what you're working on?
I think for me, as soon as I met Chris's work, I was like, this is home. Like, this is what I've been looking for as a dancer. And for me, part of that and part of what's interesting is that there's always some, like, mind game, problem to solve, thing to figure out, thing to master, that's not necessarily physical, but is more like the mental physical combination. Like, can I convince my body to do this in this order at this speed? And that, I think, continually for me, as I get older, is really appealing, because it's something I can picture myself in some way doing forever. And it's always interesting.
What about you, Chris?
You know how, like, you work with someone for a long time, and then there's a... you know, you have an unspoken language or connection. And maybe I'm just overly sentimental right now. But, you know, felt like we had that instantaneously, and I often tell people what you said the first time you saw her do a piece of mine, which is that, whoa, she's just like you, except she can actually dance.
I meant that in the most loving way possible.
Which is also the perfect 23-year-old Chris to Justin, or Justin to Chris kind of comment,
yeah. It still stings. But it's perfectly apropos, and she's, you know, like, she inspires me, but she's also always, like, she's, like, the person I always imagined, or, like, I always dreamed of, so.
I'm your bass player.
She's my bass player, but also, she's making a comment that also she is, someone who takes, I have, like, a lot of, stupid ideas before I get to something, and she's normally, like, tells me what's, or she can take all that stupidity and just shift it a little bit with a little bit of common sense and practicality, and turn it into
it's not stupid stuff.
And turn it into a good idea.
So can you talk a little bit about the how you came to the framing of your curation, this idea of the mixtape, especially that it's dedicated to Nicky Paraiso, and yeah, just talk a little bit about who he is to you and how you came to dedicate this mixtape that you've created to him.
Nicky Paraiso has been a figure in our lives since basically the very beginning of our relationship. We met him. I had seen him perform before with Yoshiko Chuma, and knew that he was from afar an important but he's but he was the guy that also gave us our first shot, and when it felt like no one else would or wanted to.
Where was that at?
At La Mama. He's the curator of the club at La Mama, which is on East 4th Street in Walls Village in New York City. And he's been trying to, and he has successfully cultivated a large dance presence there. And he's a huge fan of dance, but he saw something in us and believed in us, and at times when we didn't know what we wanted to do, that kind of support keeps you going. And then also just as a performer, he's amazing. As a storyteller, he's someone who's incredibly intellectual, very eloquent, but he just knows how to punch you in the stomach, in your gut, with everything that he does.
I think the other thing about Nicky for the two of us was that Chris and I often watch things in different ways. Like, I can fall in love with a lot of pieces because of the people in it or the way they're doing something. Chris looks like big picture. It's hard for him to love a piece, no matter how good the performers are, if he doesn't like the choreography or like the stage picture. And I don't have that problem. Like, I can totally probably watch something that he would hate and think it's like the most amazing thing, because I'm like, yeah, but did you see what they're doing and how they're doing it? And oh my God, that's so hard. And I think one of the things we loved about Nicky is that he somehow is able to do both. Like, he's able to fall in love with pieces because the composition's great, and he's able to fall in love with pieces because he loves performers.
Uh-huh.
And so for us, that was inside out, outside in, and he has this synthesis, which is why he curates things all the time, and
yeah.
We don't.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know?
Well, he seems to just have an insatiable appetite
for
everything.
Art, and thinks that theater is home and family, and it means all those things to him. And
yeah.
I think also when we met him, that was the other thing, we were so into that space that he created. Like, this is home, this is your family, and we felt like that about all the people we were around, and that was so true for us.
Yeah.
We were like,
yeah.
But yeah, for someone who is so legendary in his own right, the fact that he walks around with such humility and just sees, he's just always aghast and agag and agog at those around him. And I want to feel that way all the time, and I often do here.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity, where people are like, why did you move here? And I feel like this show can be this is why, because these people are here, and I get to watch them often, and yeah.
And you moved here from New York 6 years ago?
2008.
Five years ago.
5 years
okay.
ago.
So, yeah, can you talk a little bit more about, how the idea to dedicate the show to Nicky came about, and...
But,
I thought you were going to ask us why I moved here, and I'll be like, well,
no.
You did first.
Oh, yeah, right. I made you do it.
And you told us it was so great.
Yeah.
I don't know. You have to come up with an idea or something, and...
Well, I think because there was two of us, too, that we felt like we needed something about how we were going to look at
mm-hmm.
things, not necessarily how we were going to pick them,
mm-hmm.
but we needed like an anchor for ourselves.
And thinking of it as things that we were showing Nikki, it didn't have to be about what is the best dance in the Twin Cities, but it was, here are some things that I need to show this guy.
Yeah.
And some of it is stuff that he may not necessarily like, but we want to show him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those decisions, you know, came up where we were like, he would really prefer this other thing, but, well, he could see that thing whenever he wants, you know, but...
But I bet he doesn't know that this is happening here, or in this way, or...
And then other things just had nothing to do with him or nothing to do with us. Like, things in that blessed way when you don't have... When the show or the piece or the thing that you're working on is making the decisions for you because something comes up and it really affects... You're like, well, if I want to include that, then, well, now these other things happen where I can put this after that or put it... Mm-hmm. Like, creating that order...
And it says something else.
As you're going
right.
along... affected the decisions of what you're, you know.
Is Nikki coming to the show?
He is coming to the show, yeah. He bought his ticket. So he's coming for Thanksgiving and then, yeah, hanging around for the show.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, no, yeah, pressure's on now.
Yeah.
I can't just call him and tell him how it went.
Yeah.
With the best of my poetic descriptive abilities. You know?
Had you, before you chose to do it in this way, did you talk to him beforehand, or did you just say, we're doing it like this, and then surprise him with it when it was on the Walker's Life website?
Yeah, we surprised him with that. So, yeah, I think he probably feels a little guilted into coming.
But that's fine.
That's fine, because...
We want to see him, and he's been talking about coming to Minneapolis since we moved here, and...
What was his response to your choice to do it this way and to dedicate the show to him?
I think he was really touched. It was very Nikki.
So talk a little bit about what it was like to curate and to put it together, and like what your memories of sitting in the Walker the day of auditions are. And
well, it was 3 days of auditions, and we saw just over 60 works, which is just stunning in and of itself. I mean, yeah, it's very, you know, humbling. And you just feel honored to be in that position where you get to sit in an empty theater and this whole community, one at a time, comes and just throws it down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's inspiring. Like, it's an awkward thing to... I mean, I've been on the other end of it, too, like, to audition the work, but... So it's just kind of being blown away. And there's a lot of, like, we had to narrow it down to 10.
Yeah.
Super hard.
Like, we could have easily done 2 weekends
of
repertory program and still send a lot of people home upset. You know, like, there's a lot of talent in this town.
And it's so diverse. Like, we saw all kinds of dance. And that's, like, amazing, because in New York, that was not the case. Like, you did this kind of show if you were in modern, and if you did tap, you did this thing, and if you, you know, did Indian dance, you did this thing, but it wasn't,
right.
Like, it was never all
on one
program.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, just the range of stuff we saw was amazing.
So then, if calling it a mixtape, did you approach the ordering of it in a way that you would approach, like, putting a list of songs together? You know, I mean, was the consideration about order... The question that I'm talking around is, how did you consider the order of the things that you chose? And was it sort of like making a mixtape?
I think it blessedly got to be more like putting together a mixtape than it might normally be, because it just coincidentally worked out that there's not a piece with, like, a major technical thing, or, you know, there's always, like, you know, some piece that needs something that makes it go first, or
right.
Some piece that needs something, it has, there's always some requirement.
Right.
Among a couple of pieces, but here, everything was really interchangeable, so we really got to think about the flow of the evening. And, And I mistakenly thought for a long time that there was an intermission in the show, so I was thinking about it in two, in two
like
halves.
Side A, side B.
So there is,
yeah.
Like
I did
a,
keep saying I didn't think there was an intermission.
Like, no, right after your intermission, these guys will come out. It'll be awesome.
Like,
okay, there's
no
intermission. Okay. Well, that, yeah, so, yeah, we did, like, we're looking at it in, like, sort of two halves, and there is, yeah, for...
And things that we wanted next to each other, like, things that we felt like, I mean, I don't know if anybody else is, but we'd be like, well, I really, like, for whatever reason, in that way, when you're making a mixtape, like, you can't necessarily say why you need those two songs
right.
together, but you know you do.
Right.
Like, I'm sure it's the same when you're making a piece and you have these two sections that you are convinced need to be next to each other because they somehow inform each other. And there were several things like that on the program. Like, and that I don't think I could explain why, but I just had like I really feel like I need to see these things next to each other now.
Yeah.
After watching 60 things, like.
Yeah.
And yeah, and we had to make that decision. Like, we saw 60 dances, we had to choose which ones, and we had to set the program order, right?
Okay.
So we couldn't like sit with yours. So that when we started thinking about putting together a program order, that affected how we were choosing
looking at
things.
Things, yeah.
And how we were thinking about choosing things and what you need to represent in the thing, and then, you know, versus our experience of the entire, you know, like of the 3 days of auditions. Like, was it to try to encapsulate or summarize those 3 days, or was it that during those 3 days these things leapt out and spoke to each other? And so you're seeing a particular sampling or facet of work that's being made here
mm-hmm.
these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Did your different... Taryn, earlier you talked about the different ways that you guys sometimes see work, and... Did that play out in your decision making or in your discussions?
I mean, she says this, but there is some things in this that are totally maybe uncharacteristic for us, like on a normal day, like aesthetically or whatever, but because of the performances and how these people are doing it, you couldn't argue with it.
But
uh-huh.
I think, yeah, and
And I became suckers for these performers where I was just like, on my knees with respect for what they're doing.
Yeah.
When on another day I might turn my nose at it as a choreographer.
Sure.
I don't think you would.
Yeah.
There's a few things we looked at each other, like we looked at them in a slightly different way, but I think all 10 pieces were pieces that we both, at the end of it, were like, yes.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
we had, like, 20 of those.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it was like, there's nothing in there that was like, I'm fighting for this, and he's fighting for that,
right.
and this is the compromise. Like, there was no compromise in the program.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all 10 things are things that we were like, hell yes. And, I mean, we made a decision and had the program order within an hour after seeing the last
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll be curious to hear what people think, because, like having had to make that decision a couple months ago now, and then thinking about it, that there's all these different threads and dots that you can connect if you want to.
Yeah.
Some are very obvious. There's some very visual things that you will see recur, but then other things that, yeah. Aren't as obvious.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just talk a little bit more just about mixtapes. And I asked you guys before we started if you had any stories about making or receiving mixtapes. And I'm curious if either of you, or if I'd love it if both of you had a mixtape story to share, or mix CD, because we made those too.
Chris made me a mix CD for Christmas that was a bunch of really beautiful songs that made him think of me on off of our records. So things that I couldn't normally take with me, and they were, it was a CD for the car, so I could listen to it to and from work, which I loved.
Do you remember one of the songs from the CD?
I can't think of any of them right now. I knew you were going to ask me that.
Chris, do you remember any of the songs from the CD?
He remembers all of them, probably.
It was all songs, yeah, for to make you feel better on your way to work.
Because I went through a very, like,
I can't leave, I don't want to go.
And I get to stay home with Bean.
Right.
So they were all things to make me smile.
Yeah.
On my way to it.
Oh, that's really...
Yeah, no, it was really beautiful.
That's really sweet. It made a real impression, too.
Well,
then a couple of months later, I made another CD, but I didn't think about the content of the song, the lyrics.
Uh-huh.
I just liked the songs, and she was like, all these songs are really depressing. Are you trying to send me a message? I was like, oops.
It sounded
like a breakup CD.
It definitely did. It sounded like, you're kind of a hot mess. I'm not sure you should come home. And I was like, oh. And then I keep thinking of this mixed CD, but I can only, like, remember one song that was on it, that when I moved from St. Louis to North Carolina, this boy made me. And it was like, we'd been friends for a long time, but we just decided we wanted to be, like, boyfriend-girlfriend. And we just kind of got into, like, the hand-holding stage, and he made me this CD, and it had Black Sabbath's War Pigs on it.
But that's the only song I can remember.
We were, like, staying at my grandmother's house, and she would just, like, be super annoyed, because I would just listen to it, like, over and over and over and over and over, and she was like, what is that noise? That is horrible.
What about you, Chris? Made or received?
The ones I remember are from high school, and they were important because it was a long drive to high school. I was in carpool with bunch of other people, and so everyone was receiving, making tapes for other people and receiving them, and so you were getting them from other people. But the ones I remember, or one I remember the most, was on a tape that was actually like only 15 minutes per side. It was like a weird short tape that my friend John Gretzka made for me, and he had like three DJ names, like he was like DJ Soulbot, Slim Master Kielbasa. He's from the Midwest originally. But he would do things, like, everything was always, like, and still affects, like, the way that I like to listen to music now, in terms of, like, really high contrast, but similar themes, like, he would go from, like, Snoop Dogg, like, kill, 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 murder, 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 to Louis Armstrong, like, I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you, but it'd be, like, the exact same sentiments, but, you know, decades apart in terms of style and theme, and so, yeah, and he was, like, all about, you know, deeply soulful things, but also, like, he had a knowledge of all things novelty and experimental, and so,
I remember,
like, I wish he still made me tapes so that I would know what to
listen
to.
He probably will, if he
does. Yeah. Well, Chris, Taryn, Beatrix, thanks for letting me have some of your dinner. The Sloppy Joe was delicious. And Beatrix, thanks for being so patient.
Now you tap on the mic.
And Chris and Taryn, thank you so much for
your
time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming over.